Well, hi, neighbors. Tonight we've chosen some of the songs that we sing and play on our dances across the country. Songs that reflect the emotion of the people that live in the nightlife. Song of happiness, sadness, heartbreak. Songs to the nightlife. We hope that you enjoy yourself tonight as you listen to our latest one. We hope you like it. It's a little different than what we normally do. But we hope it'll be pleasing to you. We hope that you can just kind of sit back, kick off your shoes, relax just a little bit, and listen to our latest song. And if you like it, tell us about it, won't you? We'll try to do more things for you.
Well, I try and start at the beginning and then bring you right up to date with my present activities, making pop records for the commercial market. I was about 5 years old when I first wanted a gramophone, and it was one of those toy gramophones with a celluloid sound box and a key to wind it up. And I remember I'd seen it in the shop window and I'd asked for it for Christmas. And as quite often happens, my wish came true and I got this gramophone for Christmas with some children's records. Well, I used to play this all the time, and it was quite obvious to my parents that this fascinated me. And when I was 7 years old, they bought me a proper gramophone, the portable type that used to be very popular, about, well, 20 years ago. And at this time, I used to be fascinated with making things out of shoeboxes, like puppet shows and slot machines and all sorts of things. And I used to try and experiment with my gramophone, and I discovered if you play the record at the end, on the run-out groove, you could shout down the sound chamber and the sound would be imprinted in the grooves. And I thought that I'd discovered something marvelous. And of course, I was really doing just what Edison had discovered years before. But anyway, this became not only a hobby, but used to take up most of my time. I used to go around old record shops in Gloucester and old sales room and buy up lots of gramophone records, a lot of which I still have at home in my attic. I'll tell you more about that later. Anyway, this went on until I was about 13 years old and discovered that it had changed over to, I wanted a magnetic pickup, which I connected to the gramophone. And then I discovered that I wanted to amplify this. And I made my first one valve radio. And then, of course, my first one-valve amplifier. And by the time I was about 14, I'd sold my treasured possession, a cine camera, and had bought my first amplifier, £7.10, I remember. And the war was on at this time, and I used to play records for dancing too, mainly Victor Sylvester and different things, different records that were very popular then. And I think this is when I began to get an ear for the type of music the public liked. Something with a good, solid rhythm and with a tune forced home. And I also naturally began to collect a lot of radio gear. And I soon found that my entertaining with gramophone records became very popular around Gloucestershire, and I was in pretty big demand. At one time, to such an extent that I used to have to employ some other friends of mine to operate gear. Say on an August bank holiday, they would be at Huntley, I'd be in Gloucester, and somebody else would be at Newham. And by this time I was about 16, I used to provide music for amateur dramatic societies. I remember plays like The Ghost Train and The Portuguese, and lots of plays, and I used to go out of my way to provide the right sort of music for them and the right sound effects. My father was an estate agent and naturally wanted me to be the same, but my head was always in radio books and audio books, and so they used to let me work in a radio shop in my spare time. And then I went in the forces when I was 18 and became a radar mechanic. And my 2 years in the RAF was taken up by learning as much as possible about radar. And also I was pretty handy around the camp at repairing radios and record players. When I came out, in the meantime my father had died, I decided that I must take the plunge and move to London and take a job connected with recording, because during my time in the services I'd experimented with wire recorders and disc cutting, and this really fascinated me more than anything else. And so I came to London and took a job for 1 week in a film dubbing room, which I must say I disliked because there was nothing creative in it. And I left this to take a job in Stone's radio shop in Edgware Road. And I kept this job for 2 months. Then I saw the International Broadcasting Corporation were advertising for an engineer, a TV engineer. So I went along and I discovered it was operating a closed circuit television setup. This was before commercial TV had started. And I took the job. After about a couple of weeks, I was invited to go on one of the Luxembourg shows, People Are Funny, which was then, the chief engineer was Tig Rowe, who's now at Associated Radio Fusion, I believe. And after a couple of weeks, I was put in charge of the show itself. Of course, this was a great honor for me, and I really did work extremely hard to keep the standard of recording up, which at times is extremely difficult. And by the way, this is when I first met Mr. Orders, who'd come along to a show at Torquay to take some particulars. And I remember we had a long, long discussion about the different gear we were using. Well, at the same time, when I arrived back in London in the week, I was put on some pop recording sessions. The first one, I believe, was for Pi. It was Ted Hockridge record. And about my third recording became a hit. It was by Frankie Vaughan. It was called Green Door. After that, Philips used to use me almost entirely, and also Pi. And I built up quite a reputation of being able to record pop records. This coupled with my weekend activities with the show just to keep me terribly busy, and it got to the stage where I began to feel that I'd reached about as far as I could get at IBC. And one day, Dennis Preston suggested, would I like to work with him? Well, Dennis Preston is an independent disc producer and handles artists like Acker Bilk, Chris Barber, Mike Preston. And after a little bit of thought, I decided to take the job with him. And he had a small office then in Denmark Street. I found a small room in Newman Street and bought an old magnetophone editing machine. And I spent most of my time editing the recordings we'd made at IBC. They were Lonnie Donegan hits and Johnny Duncan, and well, quite a stream really. I recorded Petit Fleur and Val Penny Blues, all the Donegan hits. And the list of actual hits I've recorded reaches about 40. This is in the last 4 years.
Me and I'm feeling down. I go to a place just out of town. It's a wishing well. It's a wishing well.
Well, I then wrote a song called Put a Ring on Her Finger, which was quite a big hit here and also in America and brought me in quite a lot of money. And with this, I decided that I'd like to try and start my own record company. Now, this may seem ridiculously ambitious, but I'd made up my mind, and so I did it. And it was called Triumph, and I took a partner called Barrington Coop. Well, he was a very classically minded person, and we never really saw eye to eye. I'm completely pop-minded and like to cater for the teenage market. Well, the fourth record, which was Angela Jones by Michael Cox, became a hit, and this is where the problem started. We discovered that we didn't have enough money to carry on pressing this record, and so we had difficulties, but anyway, it got to number four. And then I discovered that things were being misused in different ways, and that I was advised to leave the company and try and start up again on my own. Well, this, of course, was impossible because by this time all my money had gone, and so I decided to take a partner by the name of Major Banks, who's with me to this very day, and I started a company called RGM Sound. Well, the difficulty was finding premises to make the recordings, because I realized using other independent studios were very expensive. And in the end, I found this building in Holloway Road, which gave me three floors. The ground floor is occupied by a leather shop, leather goods shop. And well, I decided this was the place for me. So I moved the small amount of gear that I had in and talked to Major Banks and described the sort of things I wanted. And and ended up with the equipment that I'm using today. I'll describe, first of all, the studio itself. It's on the third floor, and it's the size of an average bedroom, no larger. I've covered the walls with acoustic tiles, all the walls except one, which is covered with a thick curtain. This has very good absorbing power, and the studio is extremely dense. The floor is carpeted, and the ceiling is completely covered in tiles. And only the one wall has a few tiles missing, and this gives me a certain amount of brightness. And but basically, it's completely dead. I have no playback speaker in the studio, and no cue lights. I have a piano, which I've put drawing pins in the pads, and it produces a more metallic sound, which is much better to record, and it's much more suitable for pop records. The microphones, the cables, lead straight down into my control room, which is about the size of a small bedroom. Well, it actually was used as a small bedroom, I should imagine. And in this control room, I have a sort of desk with the equipment piled on it, and I have a table and I have a rack. But let's go back to the studio, and I'll describe the microphones. The main microphones are two U47s. I think this is a wonderful microphone, and I use it for all my vocalists. It has a very good characteristic for close work, that is, for a vocalist instruments that you need a lot of presence on. And to help this, I use a small piece of foam plastic on the front. This stops pops and bangs when a vocalist works close to it. I did have a stereo condenser microphone, the SM2, but this has broken down on me. I believe it has a habit of doing this. First the one side went, then the other, and to be quite truthful, I haven't mended it recently, because it didn't really stand out any more than the microphones I'm using. The others are AKG mics, the small microphones, dynamic types that are very popular today. I have about six of those. I have also a couple of Reslows. I use one on the bass drum and one sometimes for a vocal group, working on both sides of it. Really, the microphones aren't all that expensive, but they're very efficient, and being such a small studio, they're used pretty close to the instruments, and later in the other control room, I add echo to different channels, and this way I get what I feel is a more commercial sound than to get the instruments to balance themselves in the studio. Anyway, we go into the control room now, and the main recorder machine is a Lyrec, twin track Lyrec. I usually record the voice on one track and the backing on the other. The other recorder is a TR-51, and this I use for dubbing, and I must say it's turned out to be a marvelous little machine that I would prefer to change it soon for something like an Ampex, which would possibly be a little more reliable. This machine tends to pop just a little bit. Sometimes you get sort of bumping in the background. I think it's to do with the bias. The mixers, there's a varied selection. I have a homemade mixer, which is about four channels with top lift on each. Then I use a Vortexen mixer, which is a pretty good solid job and the sort of thing that you leave and sort of forget, but it has been very useful for me. And then I use a Vortexian tape recorder for delaying the echo. This gives me tape delay echo, which I use. Then above my control room, I have a room which I've made into an echo chamber, and it's quite remarkable for the size of it. It really gives me a very, very good echo sound, which is on all my records. And also, I use electronic echo, which I have a patent on. It's my own invention, and this is used quite a lot on my records too, especially on guitars and percussive sounds. The vocal mic goes through a little cooker I've made, which has got bass, top and middle lift in it. It was originally a small amplifier. It has three channels, so I can mix in a vocal group with it and possibly the frontline instrument. And this is on top of the Lyrec, one of the amplifiers, and it's quite handy. I can mix when without having to walk about the control room too much. The speaker is a Tenor dual concentric in a Lockwood cabinet. That's what they use at most studios today. I also have the same type of speaker downstairs, so I can play my acetate and record through, make sure they're cut properly and the sound is well up. I've also got in my control room for the second channel, the vocal channel, I have another Tannoy speaker cabinet, the smaller type that fits into a corner. I don't know the model, but this I find rather metallic and I only use at low levels. I can't really balance on it. Anyway. I've tried, I just can't seem to get a balance on it. It has seems to have an artificial top lift that rather misleads you. Well, I service my own gear. I have an advanced oscillator and a small oscilloscope, a type you can pick up for £15. The oscillator is very important. I quite often use it on sound effects on some of my records. I have some bits of gear that you don't usually find with the Keen recordist, and that is an old BBC limiter, which I use on the voice track quite often. It is very ancient. It's got the old large pin, large bass type valves. It must be at least 30 years old. That is very efficient and isn't all that noticeable in its operation. Then I have a compressor which I built myself. I found the design in one of the magazines, and it works very, very efficiently, very pleased with it. I have also, for the electric bass, I feed this through an equalizer unit. And on this unit, I've experimented, and I feed the output back. I believe it's positive feedback. But when carefully done and through a choke, it gives you the effect of the string being plucked. You get sort of a metallic pluck of the string itself. Quite effective on recording. I don't always use it, but on the Outlaws records, for instance, I use it. Well, I think that describes pretty accurately the equipment. Oh, by the way, I feed my output to the speakers through quad amplifiers. They're a wonderful amplifier. I also use a quad downstairs for playing my records.
When the mists are rising and the rain is falling and the wind is blowing cold across the moor, I hear the voice of my darling, the girl I love and lost a year ago. It's hard to believe, I know, but I hear her singing in the sign of the wind blowing in the treetops way above me.
Johnny,
yes, I'll always remember till the day I die. Johnny, remember me. Well, someday I guess I find myself another little girl to take the place of my true love. But as long as I live, I know I'll hear her singing in the sight of the wind blowing in the treetops way above me. Yes, I'll Johnny, remember me.
Now, it would be a good idea if I described to you a rather typical day in my life. It starts about 9:30, the phone begins to ring merrily away, and it's a combination of publishers ringing up to tell me the songs they have, and or agents asking when their artist's records are coming out or when the artist should arrive at my place to make the recording, and various other things. As a rule, most days I have some form of recording to do. We'll say today I'm going to make a record with a new artist. It's been brought round to me and I feel has potential. I've auditioned him and he has a different sound and voice, and I feel has the sort of looks that could appeal to the public. And I've decided to make a record with him. He signed his contract, which is for 1 year with an option for further two. And the musicians are beginning to arrive. On this occasion, I'm using the Outlaws as the basic rhythm group, and mainly because they're top-rate musicians and got to know exactly what I want in the studio. Well, the artist has his microphone, a 47, in the corner of the studio, screened off from the rest of the musicians, and he can sing his heart out without anybody taking any notice of it. He's gone on to a separate track. The bass is fed in direct, the guitars have microphones in front of their amplifiers, the drums have about two or three microphones sometimes placed around it. And each musician has been given the chord sequence for the song, or has been listening to a record downstairs on my player and have dotted down the chords, thing. And then we go ahead and we record until I have a very good track. I'm not worried about whether the artist is singing in tune or phrasing properly. I have a very good rhythm track. And for the A side, and we do the same for the B side. And then that's all for the rhythm group. Off they go. And I then dub the artist's voice on again. I listen to the tracks you've already got. Sometimes these are good enough. But as a rule, he wears earphones and the track's played back to him and it's dubbed onto my TR-51. So we have voice and rhythm tracks. It's during this recording that I produce the artist, and this possibly is one of the most important things in making a pop record, to make him sound new, a new voice, different phrasing, to bring out the personality onto the record. When this is done, I phone up Ivor Raymond, who I think is a brilliant arranger and I use for most of my recordings, and tell him that I would like him to come along and listen to some tracks I've got. By this time, I have about three records for him to arrange for. He comes along and we play them over. I describe what I would like here, there, and the type of sound I want. He goes away with the tracks and the voice and arranges for it. Sometimes he uses four strings, never anymore, four violins. We'll be right back.
to hold you. And you know I've always told you that we must never, ever part. Oh, have I the right to kiss you? And you know I'll always miss you. I've loved you from the very start. Come right back, I just can't bear it. I run to love and I long to share it. Come right back, I'll show my love is strong. Oh yeah. Have I the right to touch you? Oh, if I could, you'd see how much you send those shivers running.
Up, 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 up wonder when the pirate ships go off air.
Me too.
Well, I see pajama style shirts are in there.
Well, pajamas are out. As far as I'm concerned, anyway.
Who cares?
Well, I know of a few people that do.
Yes, you would. Wow. These two coming now. What do you think?
Mine's all right, but I don't like the look of yours.
Well, I must be off.
Yes, you're not looking so good.
Cheerio. I'll see you down the dilly.
Not if I see you first, you won't.